on today's Compassion Radio.
I think it's so important that our kids understood there's something far more important than themselves. We gravitate as a family towards conversations of love and acceptance and grace and all of those things that, I'll be honest, I didn't hear as a very, very young person growing up. 25 years into that journey right now, I seek it out, I gravitate towards it, and I celebrate it.
Have you ever dreaded where the path ahead would take you? Hi, Bram Floria here with Compassion Radio. Each day we take you on a journey of real faith to the farthest edges of the kingdom of God. And going to the place where God's hand is at work requires the right kind of gear. You wouldn't climb Everest in flip-flops, after all. In Ephesians 6, Paul reminds us to suit up for battle, not a stroll in the park. Now that armor is not to put the smack down on other people, those who might disagree with us or annoy us. Rather, the armor is to protect our hearts and minds so that we can run to the places where good news is desperately needed. Our guest for the past 2 days has a story like that. And what looked like a death march at first turned out to be a life-giving lesson for him and one he's been paying forward for years. He's back for one more day of sharing from the heart and reminding us of our better angels. Author and speaker David Averin picks up a conversation from yesterday with a recap of the transformative experiences he faced and the discipline of a father who truly loved him even when he couldn't see it. Thanks for joining us today.
When we grew up together, great friend for so many years, and someday I was mad about something, and from some deep, dark, ignorant place in my 11-year-old head, I called him a racial slur. And I don't know how my father found out. I think my brother told him or something. But I just remember this rage as he came flying in my room when he realized what I had said, grabbed me by the back of the collar, marches me up the street to their house, on the front doorstep, rings the doorbell, has his entire family come out on the front porch and makes me stand in front of each one of those people and apologize for the hateful word that I had used. And it was a profound lesson for me. He said in no uncertain terms, this is not what we believe. This is not who we are. And I remember thinking to myself in later years that when confronted with a similar situation, I hope I have the courage to be as harsh and straightforward as he was.
You sensed it as shame at the time, I'm sure, and he was disciplining you. And the things are related in your emotional experience, but they are not the same. Your dad did not shame you. He provided a way out for you.
And he reminded me that I shamed myself with my behavior. And so from a religious perspective, he was not. My dad was a rocket scientist. My dad was probably as close to atheistic. He used to have the old line, there are no atheists in a foxhole. He was a rocket scientist. My father invented the first cameras that ever took pictures on the surface of another planet. So we were very Jewish by culture and heritage and ancestry. I have since done my ancestry.com, my 23andMe, and I'm 100% Ashkenazi Jewish, the same tribe. Like for 900 years, nobody ever had relations with anybody outside the tribe. But you don't grow up in America, and I'll get personal here, as a non-Christian with a positive view of Christianity.
Okay, hold there for a second. Repeat that statement. I want people to grab what you just said.
Yeah. You hear from the less kind factions of the faith.
When you're on the outside, like you felt you were, looking at Christianity, the voices you hear are not just negative, but they're projecting anger on you.
Yeah, very much. And judgmental, and telling me that I was going to hell. And I just remember talking to a friend saying, at what point do we become unchosen? Right. I mean, there are no two faiths that are closer in this world than Jews and our Christian brothers. And so I was repelled because I heard from people who told me very negative things. And I knew I was a good person. And then I got exposed to a very kind side through my wife and through family at Cherry Hills Community Church. Pastor Jim Dixon, we spent 20 years and I heard love and I heard stories and we experienced music. And I'm like, this is not what I grew up around. And from there, I made the decision that we were going to raise our children in the faith. She was already Christian. As a matter of fact, she had traveled with the Continental Singers as a teenager as well, and introduced me to a kinder, gentler, loving side of the faith. And so when we talk before and I talk about being on the journey, it's a wonderful journey. It's hard to unlearn certain things that we had in the past, but I think it's so important that our kids understood there's something far more important than themselves. And we gravitate towards that love. We gravitate as a family towards conversations of love and acceptance and grace and all of those things that, I'll be honest, I didn't hear as a very, very young person growing up. But 25 years into that journey right now, I seek it out, I gravitate towards it, and I celebrate it.
Amen to that. How long did you have your dad?
My dad had passed away a few years ago, so we had him until he was 80. And just a really, really terrific man. I mean, we're just very, very close. He grew up in a family with a father who was very distant and very harsh, and never once, as he'd relate to me, saw his parents show affection for each other. And he was the opposite. I mean, we are the most physically, I mean, if you watch like My Big Fat Greek Wedding, we're sort of Mediterranean. We hug and kiss and love. And I don't think I ever saw or parted with my father without a hug and a kiss. And so I attack my kids who are no longer kids. My youngest ones are 18 now. And I chew on their arms and I kiss their neck. And I wrestle with my girls, and I love that. One of my favorite lines, there's a very famous sage, a guy named Noah Ben Shia. I don't know if you know Noah. He wrote Jacob the Baker, a famous series. But he had a saying that was on 40 million Starbucks cups, and I love this. His quote was, "Do not hug your children so that they hug you back, but so that they'll hug their children and their children's children." I love that. But then, first of all, I do hug them, so they hug me back. But I hope to have modeled and passed along that level of love and physicality that I think we need as humans. We're a very, very physically affectionate family. My son is 6'2 and about 220 pounds, and he is just a drug for me. I can't keep my hands off him. I bear hug him any chance I get. And I told him, someday you got to get big and strong because you're going to have to carry me upstairs to bed someday, like I did for you the first 12 years of your life.
Yeah, I think I pretty much echo that, and that I tell my kids often I'm addicted to them, and they are beautiful people. And in fact, I'm in the bookend right now between our daughters. Our daughter's the oldest in the family, and my oldest daughter just graduated from Gonzaga this past weekend with her master's.
Congratulations.
And my younger daughter is going to be graduating from Calvin University with her degrees. And they're all moving on with life and doing those great things. So we're on our way to empty nesting too, except that we had a bit of an addition later in life than we expected. So we end up having a baby about 45, and he'll be with us for a while longer, turning a teenager next year. So I'm very happy that God gave us a longer stretch here and gave us the four kids that he had promised us. So I'm with you there. These paying it forward things that you're talking about, this is the right way to pay things forward. It's not just about money or fiduciary responsibility with the things in your hands you hold that are tangible, but the intangibleness of living beings. That are the things that we invest in so that they can pay it forward to those who follow them. Our church up here in Washington that we've been attending for quite a while, it's our home now, their motto as Legacy Church is to rewrite futures for generations to come. Everything about them is focused on equipping people to be change makers, to become the kind of people that really do transform the trajectory of their entire life and what comes from them, their progeny. That's how God changes the world anyway, is by changing people. He doesn't just drop a bucket of money there and say, that solves your problem. He drops people in key situations and says, do something with what I gave you. That's why I love my Compassion Radio family out here that we talk to, because they actually step in and make things happen in ways that only people who say yes to God can really do. I like what I'm hearing from you, David, about relationships and about the value of people and the people that inspire us the most. I'm going to ask a tougher question for you now to wrap up our time.
Sure.
What does the evangelical church need to hear from someone like you who's been on the outside, been on the inside, flows in and out, and also speaks with authority to a secular world, but from a rootedness that says there is real truth to be lived by? You don't go out there to say everything's relativistic or everything will change tomorrow. You adapt and you become an adept at doing new things, new ways. But the core, the reality of how God made us as people, you recognize, and I see it in the way you speak, that you believe there's real truth out there and that that thing is going to be eternal. So what is the evangelical church missing right now that they need to be reminded of? What do they need to learn about people like you who had been traumatized from the outside? Especially as a young Jewish kid coming from L.A., your father being in that situation.
Yeah.
I believe, David, that God used all these circumstances to make you who you are. and brought the people to you that he brought you and created the people through you that he created for his purpose and his glory. I believe that. I know you understand the language that I'm speaking here.
Yeah.
What is the church missing that needs to be rebuilt into our ethic to be world changers in the positive sense?
Yeah. I first of all, how arrogant would it be of me to tell the church what they need to do?
Speak to me then.
I think from my own personal perspective, God is not a weapon. Mm. God is not the sword to fight your battles. God is the means to be a magnet for love. Be the kind of person that people want to be around. And there's so much fervor with those who are espousing their beliefs. And I get that. I understand the passion behind it. But you attract a lot more flies with honey than with vinegar. I think those who model that, those who are Christ-like, I think are far more powerful than those who have the bully pulpit. And so there's something wonderful in those, and we know those people, right? Those are the people that you just want to be around. Mm-hmm. I think when you model it, you bring people to it. Mm. That's the best answer that I can come with. There's a lot of ways to accomplish. There's also ways to repel. Mm-hmm. What's the old line? I mean, this is really aging myself right now. It was that great song from the early 1970s called One Tin Soldier. Mm. It says, go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. Mm. I think there's too much of that. And once again, I can't be arrogant enough to say what people should do or what they believe. But I think you can find a biblical passage to justify anything you want to do, positive or negative. But I think there's also a lot of wonderful biblical passages that encourage love. Mm.
Yeah, and I think a whole lot more. And sacrifice, of course. The thing I've been kind of studying through with Sandy, my wife, as we do our study through the book of John on Mondays, is how much God puts before us in the person of Jesus that is truly and completely impossible. And yet he says, do it anyway. And so we're being set up, it seems, by God himself to do the impossible. He's right there, and he intends to make the impossible possible. And I believe, too, that the impossible, it feels like right now, the reconciliation of the church with the world so that love actually becomes the prime ethic and not just being certain and being zealot, righteous, and holier than thou, that spirit can go away. The one that is Jesus can come back. And I believe that because I believe that God's transforming my heart to have more faith in how he actually interacts with us and that he will make it possible for us to act that way too. So as you take your personal ethic, your spiritual pursuit, your passion, your love, and your sense of meaning back on the stage as you go out there in the world again, the world opens up, you can stand on the stage again, you get to do the thing you love doing, you get to be the hero, you get to sign books, you get to get claps at the end of your presentations. What does humility look like for you? When you're in that situation, how do you know you're really being true and real when you do the work you do?
It comes from why you do it. I'm extroverted. I am to the core an extrovert. I love being on stage. Yep. I spent years doing theater and music and everything else as well. So that's sort of my natural environment. Mm. But I think it's understanding that you're not doing it for the praise. You're not doing it for the applause. Of course, that feels great. You're doing it because you truly want to make an impact. Yep. I was in a workshop, probably 12 years ago now, where we had to create our own personal life mission statement. And I'll be honest, I sometimes roll my eyes at some of these things or icebreakers like, oh, just, you know, it's just so not me. Mm-hmm. But this was one of the most powerful exercises I've ever done. And so what came out of that, which is something that I gesture over, it's on my wall, I typed it up, I printed it out, and it's just one simple statement that is my North Star. Okay. And the simple statement says, I want to spend my life doing things that matter with people who care. And in that, I think it's deeper because it also excludes, I don't want to try and convince people who already have their own mindset or their own way. I want to do things that make an impact and things that matter. I want to spend my life doing that. That's my life's work, whether it's with my family and my kids or the clients that I serve from the stage or from the front of the room. And I think it's an issue of just getting older. Mm-hmm. I don't want to save the world. Mm-hmm. I want to make a really big impact on the people within my sphere.
Right.
And I don't go after those who don't feel as if I do, because I think it's wasting time in many cases, not necessarily talking about the fence sitters. So I love that line that says, I want to spend my life doing things that matter with people who care.
And those things you just mentioned elicit a kind of emotional response to us when we hear them. We feel something by that statement. And what I'm hearing you talk about is an invitation into an experience of joy. Because as you do these things this way, there is going to be fruit. And of course, New Testament, we hear about the fruit of the Spirit. These are the things that God brings about when we do things His way and follow Him into the places He wants us to go. Stuff comes out of us that is God-like.
Right, because those are the things that matter.
Yeah. Friends, before we jump back to this important conversation, a quick reminder that it's your generosity and support that make Compassion Radio possible. Especially at a year like this, we need your vote of support. Call 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or give online at CompassionRadio.com in order to keep this program coming to you each day. And hear me when I say this. We are very thankful for you. Especially now. And now, back to the interview.
I want to do things that make an impact and things that matter. I want to spend my life doing that. That's my life's work, whether it's with my family and my kids or the clients that I serve from the stage or from the front of the room. And I think it's an issue of just getting older. Mm-hmm. I don't want to save the world. Mm-hmm. I want to make a really big impact on the people within my sphere.
Right.
And I don't go after those who don't feel as if I do, because I think it's wasting time in many cases, not necessarily talking about the fence sitters. So I love that line that says, I want to spend my life doing things that matter with people who care.
And those things you just mentioned elicit a kind of emotional response to us when we hear them. We feel something by that statement. And what I'm hearing you talk about is an invitation into an experience of joy. Because as you do these things this way, there is going to be fruit. And of course, New Testament, we hear about the fruit of the Spirit. These are the things that God brings about when we do things His way and follow Him into the places He wants us to go. Stuff comes out of us that is God-like.
Right, because those are the things that matter.
Yeah, to God Himself.
Yeah, I wanted to frame it that way. Yeah. There's a lot of things we can do. It doesn't mean that everything I do is something that matters. I love endless shrimp at Red Lobster. I'm just saying. It's endless. It's awesome.
Which is a miracle itself coming from a little Jewish boy.
Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't mean that everything we do and everything has an impact. We're also very human.
Yeah. But there's a lot of joy in a bucket of shrimp, man.
I'm telling you. But for those things where we do have discretion and we do have choices to be made, and every day there's choices, it's left or right or up or down or paper or plastic. Are we doing something that matters? Mm-hmm. And so that's my criteria. That's my North Star for the big things.
Yeah.
Are we doing things that matter?
Fair enough. David Averin, we didn't talk yet about the books, and I know you're promoting one and premiering it even right now, but I want them to know where they could find you.
I don't need to promote anything. Thank you for that.
I know you don't, but I do want them to know some of the titles.
Sure.
The book you're working on premiering right now is called what?
The new book is called The Morning Huddle, Powerful Customer Experience Conversations to Wake You Up, Shake You Up, and Win More Business. And the whole idea of it is it's based on this video series I have of just getting teams to talk and to talk about what's really important, to get together once a week, once a day, once a month with one subject to really understand what's changed in the lives of our customers and clients and what do they prefer, what do they need, what do they fear. And what would they love in this world? And how can we provide it better for them? So the book, The Morning Huddle, is 40 different conversation starters where I tell some personal stories, but there's an action at the end of it. Think more about this. Listen more for this. Consider this. Come to a consensus about this. Because everybody's working hard. This is scheduling serendipity. The best conversations come from your own team, your own family. Most of it happens by happenstance. It happens sporadically, catch as catch can. And so the purpose of this is to put it on the calendar, have real conversations, put your phone on vibrate for 20 minutes and deal with something important. So if they want to learn about me, you can look me up at davidaverin.com.
I'm capturing an idea here. Because sure. You speak in a language and an idiom that is focused on business and use that glossary, that doesn't mean that the underwriting principles can't be translated into family speak or into church speak.
100%.
So I see the applications here being any team that wants to build real relationship might use these tools to build it out in the context they find themselves in. So if a church staff needs to have a way to actually
100%.
Connect in a way that's not just about doing business, or a family needs to start a conversation to spend time together, have a reason to be in the room together and rebuild that connection, that they could probably be using this book in that regard and understanding that in our context, we'll read it a bit differently, but it's still something that's very accessible.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I encourage folks as well. But it is for any group to just say, let's think about how often are we throwing people under the bus?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, they messed up that in shipping. We'll take care of it, right? You got to be the hero, but somebody else looked bad because of how we did it. How accommodating are we? How quick are we to say no to something because it's not something we do or have ever done? But maybe we should consider it because somebody might really appreciate it. So I appreciate you saying that. Yeah. Church teams, families, and others as well. It's sort of a conversation starters. I'm the catalyst for those important conversations, but the conversations are up to them.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. It sounds like a very accessible book the way you're describing it.
Conversational.
You are available in all bookstores, I imagine, and you're pushing hard on your tours and have them all handy so you can sign them to your people that give you big applause at the end of your speeches. Yeah. But of course, Amazon's out there for you too, so I'll refer people on to that. Just look up David Averin at davidaverin.com. And on Amazon, every other place you might buy books. So that's the best I could do for you, friend, as far as puffing you up a little bit.
I don't need it, but thank you for
that. Yeah, and but I do appreciate, too, the exploration of the man. You and I are of the same generation, and your experience, where you're coming from to start with, will be quite a bit different than where I came from. But it's interesting that we've crossed so many thresholds together in life, and where you were growing up and how you entered into an experience with believers in the faith we call Christianity. In such a way that you say, there's real people and real love here. And that's the prime thing that I learned to value is not to be harming others, but to support and love others. That seems to be the big ethic your dad gave you. Always prefer others first.
Absolutely.
And because of that, you are open to what we know to be the true gospel, which is Jesus saying, I did not come to condemn the world, but to save it. So you're living a saving-ish life in that regard because you're redeeming the time you have and encouraging others to do the same. So I appreciate that about you, David.
Thank you, sir. I'm honored.
Yeah. A closing word from you. One more poke at the side of the evangelical church. What would you encourage them to do today to make a difference for the things that matter to them?
It's that great line that says, being in the world without being of the world. Mm-hmm. I think we can be a light in the world. No matter what you call yourself, if you are the light, people will be drawn to you like a bug to a bug light. I guess we don't want to say that because
that's
that
a real positive outcome there.
Or something there.
All metaphors break down somewhere.
Be the light that people see. I think we can do that in all aspects of our life. See people as more than their opinions, but as the deep, complex, wonderful, tragic, and interesting people that they are, just like you.
Mm, fair enough. David Averin, thank you so much for sharing your life with us.
Thank you, friend.
And I hope that our Compassion Radio listeners will hear from me when I say, I want to hear what God has to tell us through the people that he put on this planet in special, influential, and inflexual spaces. And David is in that space. He's one of the few people I know that speak as a motivational speaker that has a deep root in what we all say we believe and value, which is we are made for a purpose and we are not here for ourselves. We need to live lives that are based upon real truth that, as I would say, would only come from God himself. But finds its application in us. And if it doesn't find its application in us, then we're telling it to be a lie. And I don't want to be hypocritical and say that I believe something that I'm unwilling to live. And you've, I think, given us a path forward in that, no matter what the context, whether we're in a secular industry or whether we're living in the Christian bubble, we're still called to be honest and true and centered people on what real life is. So thank you for sharing that today.
I just love having deeper conversations. Hmm. Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye. Friends, wherever you are on your faith journey, I'm sure you can identify with David's story today. Is there any of us who hasn't struggled somewhat with the challenge of loneliness or the frustration of circumstances outside our control? Who hasn't wondered or prayed about how to make a meaningful contribution to those we love when we suddenly can't be there right now to show it? The great irony seems to be that as lonely as we might feel, more people understand exactly what we've been going through than perhaps in all of history. We may have spent the past year apart, but we're all experiencing it together. My encouragement to you is simply this. God doesn't just know, he feels. If Jesus was ever a real person, our faith clearly tells us he's just as real today, and just as compassionate in a very real sense. My challenge to you is to invite him close today so that you will know it to be true.
There's no doubt that trying times bring out the best and the worst in mankind. I pray that God will bring out the very best of him in you today. Thank you for standing with Compassion Radio in times like this. I think you know that we're a unique voice in Christian radio. Your generosity and your faith in us make it possible for us to continue doing what we do each and every day. Our radio stations, networks, and ministry partners around the world are counting on us to continue what we do so that they can do what they do. Quality Christian teaching and programs come to you because you support it. With all that's happening in the world right now, Christian radio has never been more needed to bring you the truth, comfort, and challenge that we need to live a gospel-filled life in the world. I humbly ask that you not forget us as we do the work we do for you. If you've never given before, would you consider doing so today? If you have supported Compassion Radio in the past, would you consider making us a part of your regular monthly giving plan? Thank you, friend. We're praying God's peace, provision, and courage over you today. The toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can mail Compassion Radio at P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're online 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. Don't wait, friends. Join us online to find out how you can be involved with this unique and timely ministry. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back with an all-new Chasing the Word on Monday's Compassion Radio.